Chapter 11. The Newcomers. It was the third day since his great master's departure. Bidi sat upon the great pillars of the Faram in the light of the rising sun, his eyes closed. His contemplation centered on the state of great Faram and the harvest. The air was becoming colder. The leaves of the trees were changing. They were turning from bright and vibrant green to fiery oranges and dull browns, save for the trees with needles. Those stayed a verdant green. How curious. He examined the energies of the land closely, finding them undiminished. They were difficult to set his senses on, scattered and ever-changing as they were, but he found it through familiarity and diligence, for the land and his great master were nearly one and the same. It was a vibrant and healthy energy, although it seemed to be preparing for something. Like his great master, was the land, too, preparing for winter? The preparations were subtle, and he could not comprehend the land's intent, but he observed anyway, searching for clues or patterns. The land shifted and recognized him. Upon feeling its intent upon him, he bowed his head and parted with some of his chi, offering it up as a sacrifice. He could not feed it as his master did, but he hoped the small measure of his power he could offer would be well received. The land received it and consumed it. The feeling of being watched faded. We give to the land, and the land gives back. As always, his great master's profound wisdom was peerless. Bidi was in awe every time he contemplated it. The great master offered sacrifices to the land often. All the waste of his toils were carefully catalogued, and that which could be returned to the earth was given back. He stared at where the bones of several interlopers had been interred and found the grass there of a higher quality than that of its surroundings. It was rich in the power of the earth. The grass was fed upon by the insects. The insects were fed upon by his kin and the interlopers, and in turn, the grass would feed upon their bones. It was a cycle. This whole world was full of them. The phases of the moon, the night, and the day, these were cycles. Such things were essential. Although he had not witnessed it, he knew in his bones that once this winter was over, there too would be a cycle, coming back to the time of his birth, with colder air, when the trees had but flowers and buds. All things came and went. This was the order of the world. He felt a shift inside of his breast. He inhaled deeply of the land's air, exulting in it. Pride swelled at comprehending his master's profound wisdom. He rose from his position and went about his duties. Through his observations of his lord, he knew what needed to be done. The chicks, his sons and daughters, were to be fed from his great master's largesse. It would hopefully make them strong and enable them to do their duties. They too would guard Faram and slay the interlopers upon the heavenly herbs. He went to the rice storage, where there was a bag of rice left for him. Bidi could eat as much as he pleased, such was his great master's generosity. After taking his fill, he once more commenced his duties. The floor was swept. The storage areas were inspected. He knew not what the rice storage was inspected for, but he assumed interlopers would attempt to steal this too from his great master. He would, naturally, slay any such creature that dared to touch what was his lord's, and kept an eye searching constantly for interloper presences. Finding none, he left satisfied. Finally, he went about the most distasteful part of his duties. The great master had left him as master in his absence, and he would endeavor to never disappoint his lord. Chunky and Pipa required direction. They were stupid beasts that tried his patience, not understanding their place in the hierarchy. His great master was affectionate to them, but Bidi felt no such niceties, especially not when they had the gall to dirty his plumage with mud. He had nearly slain them both on the spot, but such acts of rage were unbecoming. His lord willed that they live, so they would, no matter Bidi's thoughts on the matter. His great master cared little about becoming dirty, so Bidi strove to feel the same. No matter how the rage bubbled, or how long it took to restore his feathers to a pristine state. Instead, he had merely toppled both of them with a flick of his wings. Now they were more respectful, though they still dared to test him, squealing and snorting and defecating everywhere. He opened the gate for them, and they trundled out, their ugly, beady eyes upon him. He leapt upon Chung Ki's back, and they wandered towards the forest, where they could root their noses through the dirt, consuming roots and tubers. Swift smacks of his wings directed both of the great beasts when they sought to run from their pens. He had no desire to herd them across all of Pharam. They would stay within his sight and return when commanded. Luckily, today they were cooperative, keeping their incessant noises to a minimum and returning after a mere hour, having eaten their fill. The pen was shut, and Bidi breathed a sigh of relief, then washed his feet and wings to rid himself of their smells. At this point in the day, he would normally attempt to once more give his essence to the crops. He needed to carefully infuse his chi into their structures, but the crops were all gone, harvested save for the heavenly herbs, which had been moved to a more sheltered area. So instead, he sat upon the great pillars and turned to his contemplation. He was just settling in to properly cultivate when he felt it. Eyes upon him. He had been feeling flashes of interlopers. At first, he'd assumed they had fled, scared of his strength, but now he felt a horde. He sounded the alarm, and his females ran back inside the coops. He glared at the invisible eyes watching him from the forest. The interlopers would meet their doom. The scouts were already fleeing when he turned back to hunt for them, so he followed their trail. Across the hills, over the rivers, and through the trees he went, marching inexorably towards the interlopers. He laid his eyes upon them when he arrived in a small clearing. There were many, nearly 20 in total. Most of them were small things, even smaller than himself, with hairless tails and beady eyes, all gathered around an edifice of wood and metal. He felt his wrath beginning to stir. Bidi considered himself of mild temperament, but even he could not stop the ugly bubbling in his gut. These interlopers dared not just to intrude upon his great master's land, but they'd had the sheer, wretched gall to raise a structure on these sacred lands. He glared at the scaffold and the cauldron. He would chase them off, or else slay them for this insult. His feathers puffed up with wrath, and he leapt from his tree, descending upon them like he had once descended upon Basibushi. Yet this time he did not slink or strike in silence. He was his great master's favored warrior, and he would not hide away. He landed in the clearing, announcing his presence to them, his mighty cry sending the small ones skittering away in fright and terror. The sound echoed through the hills, his rage resounding through his great master's entire domain. Bidi stalked towards the little beasts. His stride was unflinching. His blades of moonlight formed upon his spurs. All could see their doom approaching.
"Peace, peace, guardian protector,"
he heard a squeaky voice call, and from near the cauldron scaffold, one of the interlopers appeared. It was larger than the rest, nearly as big as he was. It walked on two legs, hunched over and wringing its hands.
"We plead, beseech you, stay your blades."
It bowed and sniveled in supplication to him. Bidi observed the prostrating creature. It was clearly of no threat. He let his blades dissipate, though he continued gazing imperiously upon them. The interloper took that as a sign to continue.
"This Chaoji and his clan family are but humble, pitiful refugees. We can feel the great mighty power of this place and have come to beg grovel its masters to grant us respite. We are starved, dying, mighty guardian protector. Take pity upon us."
At that, the black-furred creature threw itself to the ground at his feet. The rest of them cowered before Bidi, some nursing wounds. All squeaked piteously, begging for his mercy. Bidi felt his anger dissipate. They truly were pathetic. Perhaps they were merely lost guests instead of true interlopers. They had not arrived at the front gate as a guest should, but he could find it in his heart to forgive them this trespass. Bidi made a decision. Guests were to be given hospitality. He drew upon as much of his regal bearing as possible and gave these poor wretches some face, lowering his head and welcoming them. The creatures cheered at his benevolence as he accepted them onto his great master's lands, as they should, for they were about to enter paradise.
"That's not even fully half of it," Hong Xian asked incredulously.
"Yes, Elder Hong,"
83 bags was the final total, Yun Zhen confirmed.
Astounding. And how was he towards you?
Brother Jin is Brother Jin. He is as he was, Yun Zhen continued, sounding mildly reproachful.
He builds a house as big as yours for your daughter. He is enamored with her, as she is him. He gave us his home without restraint and fed us from his table until we were full.
Yao Che snorted from beside him. The bull of a man had his arms crossed and was frowning as well.
The boy's virtue was clear, Xian. He has spared not a single lustful glance at my flower, Mihua, and even now promises to escort her safely with us to her intended. I shall hear no more of any doubts upon his character.
Xian frowned.
It is shameful of me to doubt such a man, this is true, but a father worries. I seem to remember you threatening Ting Fang with an axe, Che.
He shook his head while Yao Che had the grace to look embarrassed.
Still, today is a good day. I see your quick excursion has made you and your brother some wealth, Yun Zhen.
At that, Yun Zhen smiled softly.
Brother Zhen insisted we all take a portion of the harvest as thanks. We tried to refuse him, but he would have none of it. I'm honored to call him Brother Zhen and have his friendship.
Finally, Hong Xian nodded his head.
And this settles the matter. I'm sorry to have had to ask you to check, Yun Zhen. Now, off with you, and no more of this business. He is Brother Jin. Let no door in Hong Yao Wu be closed to him.
Hong Xian sighed as Song Yun Zhen and Yao Che left his quarters. He walked to his window and looked out onto the fields where Jin toiled, helping them with the last preparations to see Mihua off to Verdant Hill. His daughter, so much the image of her mother, brought the man some water with a smile, and they stopped to talk and laugh. His Mei Ling looked so happy. Xian couldn't help but smile at his precious daughter's joy. A good, productive farm and a good, productive man. He could wish for nothing better for his daughter. The last of his doubts drained away.
Ah, my dear departed, I wish you could see them one last time, he murmured wistfully.